In 2005, the world's first face transplant was performed in France. It will be several years before the same surgery would be attempted here in the U.S. But thanks in large part to the efforts of one young Boston surgeon who fought to bring the difficult surgery to his hospital, patients here in Boston whose faces have been destroyed can get a new one and another chance. WBUR's Lynn Joliker from the Here and Now Contributor Network tells the story.
And give me a big smile now. Yeah, the left side is starting to pull.
I can tell, I can feel it different here when I smile,
The simple act of smiling, it's not so simple for Carmen Tarleton. But her plastic surgeon, Dr. Bodin Pomahawk, is happy to see it's getting easier. Tarleton's face is not the one she was born with.
And how is breathing through your nose?
I'm wondering if it's making me more tired, because sometimes I have to open my mouth to breathe.
In February, Dr. Pomahawk transplanted a face from a deceased donor in her 50s onto Tarleton, a 44-year-old former registered nurse and mother of two. That was 6 years after Tarleton's estranged husband beat her with a baseball bat and doused her with industrial-strength lye, dramatically disfiguring her and burning 80% of her body. It was the fifth face transplant Pomahawk performed at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital since 2009.
Take it for granted that you, in the morning, look briefly at your face and fix your hair or whatever, but you interact the entire day with other people and you're used to just normal reactions. These patients are used to these horrified looks and isolation. They can't eat outside, they drool, they can't smell. You kind of realize that the life without face is essentially social death.
At 42 years old, Pomahawk sports a graying goatee and glasses and reveals a gentle, modest demeanor. But his unassuming presence belies a fierce determination and focus. In 1996, one day after graduating from medical school in his native Czech Republic, Pomahawk packed up and flew to Boston, where he had previously spent a brief time during a medical exchange, but knew no one and had no work or schooling lined up.
One day, he just showed up without an appointment, and he offered to work for no pay, and I told him that was a bad idea.
That's Dr. Elof Erickson, the chief of plastic surgery at Brigham and Women's. So impressed by Pomahawk's determination, he hired him to work in a lab for a small salary. Pomahawk attributes his ambition to growing up in communist Czechoslovakia, where his father, a chemical engineer, was persecuted for signing a declaration against the Communist Party and therefore could only find odd jobs outside his profession.
So he kept emphasizing to us, his sons, that we should learn language, that we should think beyond the Iron Curtain. So I was primed to just go out and explore.
And he got his chance. Just as he was starting medical school in 1989, the nonviolent Velvet Revolution happened. The communist leaders resigned, meaning the system that had been limiting him his whole life was gone, and he wanted to compete on the world stage. He knew he wanted to be a surgeon, but once he got into the surgical residency program in Boston, he knew plastic surgery was his calling because, he says, he could really be creative and innovative. And he quickly zeroed in on the face.
I think it's the most fascinating part of the human body that one can work on. And it's so intricate and so specialized, so unique. It's so hard to get it right, to do the reconstruction well. So I was all fired up about that.
He tried many operations to improve different parts of Carmen Tarleton's face in the years after she was attacked.
The ideas he had about certain surgeries to try and help me were creative, and even though they didn't all work, it was always worth the risk.
But the more times it didn't work with his burn and trauma patients, the more frustrated Pomahawk became.
Patients were often still looking very deformed, and many times the goals shifted from reconstruction to more wound control. My wife is a physician as well, so sometimes I was very happy about the result. I showed her the picture, and she was like, is this really it? Is that all you can do?
Ultimately, it wasn't all he could do. The world's first face transplant, a partial one, happened in France in 2005. And Pomahawk, still a junior doctor virtually unknown in medical circles, wanted to do the same thing in Boston. His mentor, Dr. Erickson, was one of his earliest champions. But there were others who needed convincing.
There were not only skeptics, there were naysayers. And I was trying to do my best to cheer him on and support him.
Through a long, painstaking process, Pomahawk addressed the ethical questions raised by the hospital's administrators and review board. How would patients be psychologically impacted by having someone else's face? Would a transplanted face transport some of the donor's identity along with it?
People were concerned that we may be creating, essentially, dead people walking again.
Pomahawk and his colleagues worked up computer simulations to dispel that worry. But they also had to address whether it was worth it to subject patients to risky, lifelong immune suppression drugs for an operation that wasn't life-saving. And the fact that Pomahawk would have to retrieve a deceased donor's face before the vital organs were removed for donation, so the face would receive blood flow. In 2009, all the work paid off. Pomahawk led a team of surgeons on a partial face transplant for a man who had fallen on the electrified third rail in a subway station. They followed 2 years later with the country's first full face transplant, and they've done three since, making Brigham and Women's Hospital the leading face transplant center in the U.S.
We'll figure out whether there's anything to do with the eyelids, but if there's not much, we'll start insetting, you know, mental nerves, oral mucosa.
The video from Carmen Tarleton's 16-hour face transplant shows Dr. Pomahawk's calm, deliberate, and humble manner. Though he is in charge of the surgery, he frequently takes a step back for a colleague to lead a portion of it. He works with a team of extremely skilled surgeons, he points out. They delicately connect dozens of arteries, veins, nerves, soft tissue, and muscles.
Now we'll probably carve out from the nose the septum.
Pomahawk spends about 80% of his work time in the operating room or in clinic visiting patients. The other 60% is spent on research. You'll notice, he jokes, that that adds up to 140%. Among his many research projects, he's working on ways to help the body build permanent tolerance for transplanted tissues, ultimately eliminating the need for lifelong immune suppression drugs.
Then I see that not only face, but variety of sort of a body restoring operations will be feasible, and that's really what will scale it up from few individuals with the most tragic injuries to technology that can help thousands of, perhaps hundreds of thousands of patients.
Soon, his hospital will start doing leg transplants. He'll play a role, but his focus will remain on the face. Several more candidates are waiting for donors, and he's closely monitoring the progress of the five who've already received new faces.
But you feel well?
I do. I feel better and better.
Good.
Yeah. And I'm learning to play banjo. So one of these days,
wow,
I'll play you a banjo song.
Pomahawk calls them his patients for life.
Well, they all have my cell phone. They all have direct access to me at any time. I'm almost like their personal doctor. Whatever problem they have, they can, and they do, go directly to me.
He says he feels responsible for their success and any setbacks. And though their new faces didn't save their lives, he's thrilled they have gotten their lives back. For Here and Now, I'm Lynn Joliker.
And we have a quick heads up about tomorrow's program. We're going to meet two chaplains who tend to a most unique flock, travelers. Perhaps someone traveling for surgery like the one we just heard about. That's tomorrow. You're listening to Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Gentle Giant Moving Company, coordinating moves in neighborhoods across the country with locations nationwide. More at gentlegiant.com. And Nuance, with Dragon speech recognition software for business professionals to create documents, emails, and manage schedules by speaking. Nuance.com.